This episode of Film Sack brought to you in part by Audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack and get a free audiobook download today.
It's me. Believe it. Someone, they took, switched my, for some f***ing, but it's cool. We're gonna deal with it. Oh yes, we're gonna deal with it.
If I were to let you suck my tongue, would you be grateful? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 139, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian Barf All Over Yourself in the Electric Torture Chair Dunaway.
Purple scrubs? Check. Doctor's mask? Purple? Check. These little shoe covers? Purple? Check. Purple face sharpie? Check. Purple nurple? Check. Why are we keeping this guy alive? Mm. We've already got his face.
You can't just kill him. Come on. By the way, folks, mark this down on your calendars.
We can rip his face off.
First of many arguments about this movie right there.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Also with us, Randy, don't mind this spurting hole in my neck, Jordan.
Aloha, Brian. Brian, Scott. This week's Film Sack film has the most exact, precise, accurate shot of what it's like to be a podcaster that I've ever seen. I'm talking, of course, about Caster Troy. See, name Caster. Caster Troy's box of goodies. Two gold-plated handguns, a gold money clip with a wad of cash, numerous joints, a bag of blue pills, many prescription pills, and a box of Chiclets gum. We've been found out!
Chiclets. That's how he did his teeth to match Travolta so perfectly.
He had to clean up that tongue so he could get it sucked by an FBI agent. And then finally with us, Brian, the peach I could eat for hours, Ibbot.
I could suck a tongue for hours. Oh, hey, Doc. What, you put a microchip into my larynx that could be dislodged by a violent sneeze? Oh, right. And you surgically inserted a syringe full of sedatives in my jaw that could be dislodged if I say the word bleh.
Nicely done.
There's so many things wrong with this movie.
Oh, but there are so many things right with it. We'll get to all the wrongs and the rights in a minute. We're talking about Face Off, everybody. Scott Fletcher explains.
It's me.
Whoops. Scott Fletcher explains.
Face Off. FBI agent Sean Archer goes under the knife to acquire the likeness of terrorist Caster Troy and gather the details about a bombing plot. When Troy escapes custody, he undergoes surgery to look like Archer so he can get close to the agent's family.
Ooh, creepy and strange.
But why?
Why would they? Look. Can we just park the premise at the door for a minute? I understand it's a stupid idea for how to infiltrate and get the info you need from freaking weirdo Troy.
Oh, I'm not even worried about it. I actually am okay with them going to extremes to get information for the bomb. I just don't understand why the other direction.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I don't understand why Nicolas Cage's character as the bad guy.
Well,
would want to be the head police guy. And
he explained
it. If he doesn't put something on that face, it's going to get infected.
That's true. Very true. But he explains in the movie why he's doing it. He explains to his brother. He explains to Bald, what's his name?
And the reason is because you can't put a price on being an American superstar, hero, whatever, but that's bull hockey. Money. Well, yeah. Money,
right? But also power and control. I mean, he's going to be the biggest.
You can't get no money and power from being a head FBI hero agent. You ever seen Ollie North? Does he look rich to you?
Well, actually, yeah, but that was from his radio career. But yeah,
I just want to return to Scott here. He's like, if you even discounting the premise, fine. I don't mind discounting the premise. I really don't. Let's just all agree that it's a fantastic premise. I'm going to demonstrate that it's an awful film.
So here's where it breaks for me.
Execution is kind of good. It's always the ideology that always breaks me.
Okay, well, I'm you know what? The way you put that, Randy, I'm totally fine with that being the basis for the argument. That is clear the playing field and set up the rules very, very simply, which is... Is this movie, forget that it's an outrageous premise or that medically or scientifically it's not possible, because there's plenty of movies where we're asked to believe things that are ridiculous and out there, yet we still love the movies,
right.
Back to the Future, or whatever.
Yeah, Freaky Friday. Wait, this is Freaky Friday, except they do it with faces instead of...
I wish I had your life.
Freaky Friday. Oh my gosh. I remember the original with... Panic Room. What's her name?
Jodie Foster.
Yeah, remember that? She was the daughter, and the mom was the flipper.
Right.
But anyway,
you can go ahead and send your hate mail in now. Everybody already knows this movie drives me insane.
There are two movies on Brian Dunaway's list that he freaking can't stand, and I think it's this and it's Minority Report.
Those are the two.
And ironically, and you're my friend, man. I think you're the greatest. I'd hug you if you were right here with me now. Real tight, even. But I feel like you and I, for whatever reason, have disconnected on these two movies in such a severe way. And also, it sounds like Randy, too. But you and I have had years of conversation about both Face Off and Minority Report. And it comes up all the time in conversation. And I have maintained they're both highly entertaining films. And you have maintained that you've got mostly technical problems with them.
Right. If I could ever stop rolling my eyes long enough to see what's going on, I might enjoy the films.
Yeah, we talk about all the things that come together to make a film, and that foundation, the thing that really sort of defines whether it heads off upward or downward, is on the written page. It's the script. That's the basis for everything. Mm. And script-wise, this is the showgirls of action films.
Oh my gosh. You're forgetting. Actually, it's the other John Woo movie, Paycheck, that is actually the showgirls of action films. That movie's not
don't get me
good.
Wrong, because I love John Woo. We've reviewed John Woo movies on here before, and I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But that's
Team Deluxe Away is solid.
All right. Ibbitt, mm-hmm. I got to know where you, and I am not campaigning for your support here. I just want to know where you stand. It's an important part of this episode, I think, to find out where Ibbitt is on this.
It's a movie where you've really got to basically accept that it's going to be 2 hours plus of cheese. And if you get that, if you can get your mind wrapped around that, then it's an enjoyable movie.
It's tasty, melted nacho cheese.
It is.
I mean, agree with you.
You don't walk into this thing thinking it's going to be high cinema or even middle cinema.
Yeah. but well-paced, fun to watch, arcadey kind of throwaway cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, when they're acting, more Nicolas Cage than John Travolta, by the way. I think when they're actually doing their acting, I think they do a fantastic job.
Is, being each other, you mean?
But being each other. I think
sometimes Cage gets a little overt, like they're really trying, but yeah.
I think Cage got a little bit more than Travolta did in this case, but I'm okay with most of the acting. I actually really enjoyed the internal conflict of putting yourself into your arch enemy's shoes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even from Nicolas Cage's bad guy persona, I can't even remember the people's names, because Sean Archer is one person. Yeah.
Caster Troy.
Caster Troy is another.
Just remember Podcaster Troy.
Yeah, Podcaster Troy.
So Caster Troy in the movie. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. I'm going back in time. Hold on a second. I'm having a lot of problems here with my mind. Okay. Caster Troy does a good job acting Nicolas Cage as Sean Archer.
Archer, right. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Fair enough. Least Better favorite character in this whole thing for me is Margaret Cho, but that's a whole different conversation.
Margaret Cho is hilarious.
She's annoying in this.
She's not hilarious.
She didn't even tell a joke. She's not.
That's what I loved about it.
The surgical joke.
Oh, Oh, you yeah.
finally have that stick removed. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, then somebody said, but then that make Archer all, well, Castor Troy, I guess, all skittish yeah. when she said it. He's, what did you say? And she goes, whatever she said. I can't, I really don't like Margaret Cho. I don't know what my problem is with her, but I
laughed. What about Joan Allen?
I love Joan
See,
Allen.
That's what I would, who I would say is the most annoying character in this. I like Joan Allen. Yeah.
You're not a fan of Joan Allen, the librarian?
I know. It's like, you know, when John Travolta is driving by and he doesn't realize for a second where he lives, because it's really Castor Troy. Right. Yeah. Once he saw Joan Allen, I think he would have just kept driving.
Right.
You know what? I'll stay in a hotel.
Yeah. It didn't make any sense to me either, and that's the bad thing I didn't like, because, you know, Nicolas Cage's Castor Troy is totally into, you know, loose women, fast women, dark haired. How's he suddenly into Joan Allen stiff?
Well, he's not suburban. Into it. He has to be into it. And he's getting a sick satisfaction out of the fact that he gets to hang out with the wife of his arch enemy who's now in prison.
Sure. But can we talk about his mustache for a second?
Thank goodness it was only there for a little while, but yeah, it was pretty epic.
I was actually hoping it'd be there later. That'd be awesome.
Right into the flashback.
I would like to see them transplant his mustache.
It's a part of your face.
Yeah.
Mustache.
It was soda drinking porn. It was like this nasty slow motion drink soda out of a straw. But that brings me to a point here, which is once again, what is that sound? Do you guys hear that?
I hear it too.
Yeah.
Is that you, Brian?
Is that Brian Dunaway?
Is it me? Am I doing something? You should be able to tell him the Skype thing. Am I going?
No, now you're fine. It sounded like a cell phone or something. That was really weird.
Really?
It sounded to me like a electric razor, which would be perfect.
Yeah, I was taking the mustache off.
This is not kidding. I thought Brian was literally in the background going.
I did too.
I thought he was making fart noises because I was about to justify
this
movie again.
So stupid.
The thing I was going to say is it's the way I feel about all John Woo movies, and I love John Woo for this, and that is that he's just giving me so much to chew on visually, and he's doing it in this slow motion way, and nobody's revolvers look cooler than when he's filming people shooting them. And I don't care if he puts doves in every one of his movies. I don't care if there's always two guys back to back between a wall talking to each other, just like in Hard Target.
If it's everybody with me. For some reason that uses pistols is ambidextrous, like really ambidextrous.
Right.
ambidextrous and able to always jump. Must have the toughest rib cages in the world because they're always flying through the air.
You're jumping with your rib cage? What are you talking about?
Well, no, but if you tried to land with a gun extended in your hands, the way these people are constantly doing, you're going to hit your rib cage every single time.
Oh, when they land, right.
And they were doing it constantly.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's John Woo. It's a world that doesn't exist. It's a comic book in motion. It's this thing that nobody else quite does like him or has the audacity to keep doing over and over in every one of his movies.
But when Nicolas Cage got out of the car at the airport, and, you know, he's wearing his trench coat. I always love the John Woo trench coat.
The foosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great, dude.
Thing. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That stuff and that music.
It's a very beautiful film visually.
Yeah.
You guys can't argue with that.
Oh, no. I think it. Yeah. It's fantastically beautiful.
John Woo's guns and wardrobe is like Michael Bay's planes and tanks.
Explosions. Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, actually. And it reminded me of another. One of my favorite, the Nicolas Cage after he tried serious things, after Moonlighting, after, you know, serious things.
Right.
National Treasure.
The Rock is, no, the National Treasures suck. I hate those movies. But you probably like those, don't you, Brian?
I actually like those.
Oh,
like
my gosh. Yeah. You can't like those and not like this for almost the exact same reasons.
No, but yes you can, because it's what's on the written page. And this film is so full of...
If you're about to tell me that National Treasure 1 and 2 are well-written films, I say good day, sir.
Hold on. I'm not saying they're well-written films, but relatively speaking, I'm going to get all this schlock about American artifacts all over the place and special powers and crap. But I'm not going to go see this film and also have this horrific psychology. Like, it's ridiculous, this idea. And I'm sorry, we usually go through a film kind of linear, but I'm going to jump all the way to the end.
That's fine.
This idea that this completely broken family that has been suffering the loss of a child at the end of this film can skip. Okay, so there's three things we could do at the end of this film to kind of fix what we've just been through and our ridiculous amount of post-traumatic stress. One, a lot of therapy. Two, a lot of drugs. No, three, let's bring a strange child into our family to try to fill the void created by a maniac. Oh, and by the way, is the maniac biological? This kind of crap is... It's beyond the pale in a script.
I agree. Some of that stuff's
so
goofy.
It's Cousin Oliver.
Yeah.
Like, it makes Personal Treasure look like A Tale of Two Cities.
I completely agree. Some of that stuff, and even now in retrospect after having not seen the movie in a while, yes, that stuff's goofy. And the things that kid has watched, even though he had magical headphones on, the things that kid has witnessed would have been enough to frighten anything.
Headphones. Yeah. That's a trope.
Yes. And all it took was her to just nod her head like crazy and say, yes, absolutely, yes. I'm like... Dude, it's not enough that your previously very rebellious daughter took out her freaking nose ring and ran the kid upstairs to show him his room. There's more. Oh, there's more dirt
the
here.
The Hollywood ending.
Yeah,
right. All and you needed know, to do was save the day to make your daughter.
But the music was great, and it kind of got me just a little bit. It still does. There's something about that. I wish I had the soundtrack, and I love James Powell, but I don't know. And this is our How to Train Your Dragon guy, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, right. Cool.
And I like his soundtracks, and I think this one's good. I like the soundtrack a whole bunch, and I'm surprised how much I did this little experiment at the end. I'm watching that cheesy end where he's slow motion walking around the house, and she's not even sure if he's there. I don't know what she's doing home, doing her taxes and stuff, forgetting all about her husband getting his face reattached. But anyway, he's walking up on the porch. And
this monkey shines all over again for me.
And this music is playing, And it still gets me like, yeah, that's right. You come home, you've saved the day. It's important to have this now. The family is the core of your life is back together, blah, blah, blah. It still worked for me. I then went back and watched the scene right after I was done and I turned off the sound. And it's shitty without the music.
Oh, yeah. It's creepy. It's totally creepy.
And it just shocked me how much I am swayed by good. Everyone is, but to some degree, but I am swayed by good soundtracks in a way that blinds me to the quality of the actual content on screen.
Trust me, if you were to try to watch the movie Armageddon, and I'm going to keep comparing John Woo to Michael Bay, but if you were to try to watch the movie Armageddon without the music, it would frustrate you for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, I like Armageddon. I don't ask me why.
I like Armageddon's all right. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. But you know, a lot of people probably listen right now, maybe kind of going, hey, Brian or Randy, you're crazy. Because, you know, this received a pretty good response from the get-go, even critically, and has a good response, you know, on Metacritic and all those.
Made a lot of money, did well.
Made a lot of money, did well. But it's just these things that are just so broken for me. I kept trying to think, you know what the problem is with me probably with this movie? I'm thinking, maybe I'm not thinking of the movie in a proper terms. Is it more of a superhero story, and that's what I'm not getting, or is it?
No.
I think the fact that it was such a straightforward, you know, action suspense kind of film that I wouldn't let things go.
It's a story when 100 megabyte zip disks are magical,
right, man? If this
auto running iOmega, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. If this had not been a present day story, but said, okay, it's
present day 1997, present day,
right. But if it was like 40 years in the future and they had some kind of breakthrough, I just can't believe they'd have some kind of surgical breakthrough and the only thing they would use it for is to bust,
yeah,
you know, Castor Troy. That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Well, he was okay. Keep in mind, I think some of the stuff you have to keep in mind in 1997, terrorists were cartoons for us. They were not what we see them as now, which is really terrible men who can do really, really horrific things. And so everybody was a goofy cartoon. Nobody really was real in the movies. They're all just stupid. Right. I just had the misfortune of rewatching the pilot, the 2-hour pilot for Airwolf, for Autopilot. Man, the terrorists in that thing are a joke.
It's a great movie.
Taking themselves seriously. So what we've got here is Castor Troy, this larger than life, ridiculously over the top white American dude in the role of a super terrorist with his brother who's the brains behind it. He's the bronze behind it, or the brawn behind it. And that kind of two-dimensional piece of garbage idea of what a terrorist is or what a villain is doesn't really exist anymore. Like, we don't do that in movies anymore. So some of that you kind of have to go product of its time, you know?
Well, but Die Hard works. They're totally over the top, crazy, insane.
Well, Die Hard works probably because this isn't me bashing Face Off, but this is me admitting that Die Hard's got a hell of a script compared to that. And, it's a better story.
And this is John Woo picked this script up. They've been kind of floating around for a while, and he's Chinese and grew up in Hong Kong. Oh. And, you know, and those stories, lots of times when they're Americanized, it has a lot to do with revenge and, you know, especially family revenge. And that's a very strong point they make in this, that, you know, maybe Castor Troy's motivation is absolute. You know, he's doing this just for the dig, just to get in there and just totally get that revenge or really screw the other guy over. Yeah. But you know, I kept thinking, you know, Castor Troy, really the worst you've done is actually way better than what would have happened. You was going to blow up half of what, LA?
Yeah. Los Angeles, yeah.
Los Angeles is going to blow up half of Los Angeles. They fooled you into only killing three agents. You deactivated the bomb and is living with, you know, what's his face, his wife. Big deal.
Well, that was
was actually a really better outcome. I mean, I was like, okay, movie done. It's actually, this is a lot better.
That was a better deal for everybody, yeah. I mean, the only guy that got, the person that got the Ross deal out of this whole thing were a couple of the cops who didn't know.
Right.
And got caught off guard, and the kid the girl was dating, he really got the raw end.
Yeah.
By the way, can I have a trope alert?
Yeah, let me pull one up. I might have one right here. Oh, that's not it.
Hey.
Dang it. We're on the morning stream all of a sudden.
Winner.
You won trope alert.
Sorry,
congratulations,
ahead.
Randy.
Congratulations.
Wrong soundboard. I'm good.
That was nice. Thank you for that. Yeah. I would like you to play that for me every now and then. Call you on the phone. Scott, would you play the happy winning sound?
Please do that. That'd be great. Sorry, go ahead. Your trope.
I've totally forgotten
You've
it.
You've forgotten the trope. Fantastic.
The kid was dating.
It was going to be the ultimate evil bad guy suddenly develops morals.
Oh, like, yeah.
He suddenly develops this sense of morality, and he needs to beat up a punk. Like, I was shocked the way the script was going that he didn't out and out try to rape the daughter. Like,
well, it looked creepy at first, didn't it? Like, it might happen. Right. And by the way, I just want to say something. Having two daughters, one grown, she's 18, and one who's 15. There's never been an opportunity in our house where my daughter would answer the door in her freaking undies and just stand there and have a conversation. They've always had the decorum to go put something on. Even before their dad comes around, let alone any other male figure in the house, that's just that. I know he was being creepy, but once those kids are out of diapers, dude, they start having their own kind of code.
Well, and they're kind of born that way too,
right?
Like, it's really easy to scare a small child into not answering the front door at all,
right? Because they know, they get their own instincts, they understand what to fear or whatever. But here's what I will throw this back to you. I will lightly hit this ball back into your side of the court. All right. There's my analogy. You don't make a movie like this where people switch places, be it Freaky Friday, be it Face Off, be it something else similar to this, without sympathetic response from the people in the shoes they're in. So I think you got that on the Castor Troy side when he beat up the daughter's boyfriend. That was maybe that was the biggest part of the sympathy you ever got. And then you also got it on the other side in the prison where tries to save the grunty dude.
It's the one he beat with a dish earlier.
Right.
It's a stupid trope. It's a stupid trope. We saw it in Demolition Man.
Yeah. But they're going to do it every time is all I'm saying. There's no way around this. So you make a movie like this, you're going to have that in there. Don't you think?
No, you don't have to have that trope. You can just let the bad guy be a bad guy. You don't have to pretend that something has come along. It's the freaking Joker not taking out Batman when he has the chance.
Well, that's true. But don't you think that's an interesting comparison, actually. If your guy's psycho enough and they set up Castor Troy to be pretty freaking psycho, then you'd think he would retain that. But at the same time, I don't know. It's a movie and they're never going to do it. If any time we get a Freaky Friday remake, guess what? The mom's going to go, oh, this is what it's like being my daughter. And the daughter's going to go, I've not given my mom enough freaking credit. This is totally weird.
You know, like the best example of this trope I can think of is the movie Snatch. Mm. There's this character named Bullet Tooth Tony who would do anything with regards to killing people, torturing people.
Yeah.
But when it comes to having to cut open a dog to get retrieved a lost diamond,
Was it a retriever?
It was a bulldog, right?
I don't remember.
But that's more of a
bull terriers.
That's a different trope.
Yeah. This character, as written, would have cut that dog open in an instant, and so it made no sense.
It's a different kind of trope, in my opinion. It's like I think they were trying to hint at the top of this movie when he had a mustache and he was slow motion drinking his freaking Slurpee. When he saw that the kid got shot and he didn't intend it, for just a second, that bothers him. Like, whoops, kids are not meant to be in the way here.
Right.
And then
he
goes on with his day. And I felt like the kicking the kid's butt and throwing him up against the car was a reaction to him identifying with the girl's rebellion on some level. And for just an instant, he decides he's not just going to let her get raped in the car. I think that's what they were. I'm not saying it was great. I'm saying that's what they meant to do
as
there.
As originally written, Caster Troy would have gotten popcorn and watched her get raped in the car. And that's what I'm getting at. It's just weird. And here's the thing. I actually have an observation about the whole of this nonsense.
All right.
And that is that this is a film that's a Hong Kong film transplanted to Hollywood. And there's this time between when no one in America really knew of Hong Kong films. And then we were watching them without them being altered after this. And in the middle, you have movies like this where the Hong Kong filmmaking styles were adapted for what they thought American audiences wanted to see. Right. So basically, the first big one, by the way, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon,
was the film
after this where they didn't hold back. They didn't pull away some of the nonsense. And you can see the difference. We all went and saw Crouching Tiger, and all the Americans are like, why are they flying? That's weird. There's like magic in this world, you know? And it's unexplained.
But Ang Lee, he wasn't even I know he's Chinese descent, but he was making pure American movies like Ice House and like serious dramas with a bunch of white folk in them.
But just hang out for a second, because I have a conclusion. And that is, if this film had these guys jump and fly around fighting, it would have been better.
They kind of did.
But I'm talking about magic.
Right.
They dropped because they thought American audiences couldn't handle it, would have made it ludicrous enough that it would have been easier to swallow.
Right.
I can sort of see that. I mean, It is kind of a weird thing with John Woo specifically, though, because he's always in this crime space and it's always guns and it's never ninjas or anything like that. And so there isn't any kind of
very mafia-esque.
Yeah. And so because of that, he's going to hold back. So it's always going to feel a little bit like, are you a fantasy or are you a gritty crime drama? And part of what I like about his movies is I can't freaking tell half the time.
Well, but the crime drama and the fantasy got stirred into a stupid soap opera in this case.
All right. It's fun, though. It's so much fun.
I will say when I could stop rolling my eyes, it was okay. I mean, there were parts that I was like, oh, that's – it was mostly seeing Nicolas Cage go insane.
Yeah.
I think that was probably my most enjoyed –
His eye stuff, you know, just his bug-eyed stuff that he does in this film is fantastic. I can't think of another Nicolas Cage movie, even Raising Arizona, where we get to see just such a whack job of a character.
Right. And this plays on into even later on, like Con Air, that whole – there's one scene that I was like, oh my God, I'm watching Con Air. When he's in the prison and he's fighting and he's getting his butt handed to him, he's looking at his brother – and he all of a sudden decides he better make it like he's having fun, and he just shakes his head and he does the big smile, and they have the and they have the hardcore electric guitar riff that plays along.
Oh,
with
yeah.
I'm like, oh,
I'm
my
Caster
God.
Troy. Right. Come on. I'm Caster Troy.
I'm Caster Troy. And
it's like, they all know who you are, dude. They were all afraid of you when you walked in.
Right.
With their with your big prison. Oh, yeah, that's my favorite thing. The world's maximum security prison. But it's got this stupid video monitor that's somehow going to keep everybody calm because there's like birds and like fish in it.
Deer eating grass. Right.
It's very Soylent Green kind of thing going on there.
Yeah,
with
a little bit. Or like what's the one with the
They Live?
Clockwork Orange sort of idea. Orange. Yeah, where everybody's being deprogrammed.
Why were there so many crazy high level crooks that were there? I mean, it was just like, I would expect, you know, maybe let me a handful like Gotham prison or something. There's like a million people there. Yeah.
They were all, that's some of them seemed kind of petty crimes and stuff like that. I would also say this though, those electric moon boots they all had to wear. Mm-hmm. All I kept thinking was, I cannot imagine the proposition that had to get through Congress to acquire that kind of tax money to pay for these stupid boots and every floor to be magnetized.
That thing was totally unknown, though. That place, as they said, was totally unknown. Nobody knows about it.
See, I love it. That stuff is what I love. This is not complaining coming from me. This is me saying, no, let's embrace magnetic shoes in a giant metal prison. You know, let's embrace the idea that that basically the government is giving these guys carte blanche and they can do whatever the hell they want. So they can be terrible. They're tasing everybody every 5 minutes. They got guys in electric chairs barfing on themselves like they're a bunch of terrorists themselves. Like, I just love how far that stuff goes.
Really?
Because I know it's just a stupid John Woo movie and it's all going to be in slow motion. And before you know it, a bunch of damn doves are going to fly in someplace. It's
awesome.
Did
you guys find any chick in the buckets besides me? I found one chick in the bucket that might be debunked.
You probably can debunk
this one pretty quick. It's the prison guard that Nicolas Cage, not as Castor Troy, when he was not Castor Troy, tells him that, he's going to have him fired.
This is our new chick in the bucket sound. We're just going to use that from now on.
Yeah, no kidding. That's right. Yeah, because it's the guy who says, I stop the fights in here.
Yeah.
Right, I stop the fights in here. And it's Sean Archer.
He's like, I'm a federal agent or whatever. You're so fired. Yeah. Like when I get my body, my face back or whatever.
Right.
I remember thinking at the time, this isn't really how he would act. Like, I realize he's really frustrated and he thinks he's got to do anything and everything to save the planet. But that was a little strange that he threatened that prison guard with firing him later.
Right. Followed through with it.
Other chick in the bucket for me was the choir girl at the beginning when Castor Troy's dressed like a priest and he's grabbing her butt and singing.
You just want to see her again. I didn't care.
thank you for reminding me that the film started off Showgirls bad.
It kind of did.
It didn't drift over into Showgirls territory.
And it got that was creepy to me because that girl was like 15 or something. And
when a film starts like that, you have to ask, why are they portraying this? And if you can't come up with an answer, and you better not be able to come up with an answer,
it's like, hey, do you guys see anything suspicious? We're trying to figure out how this bomb got planted while you were doing your big singing thing. Well, there was that one priest who came out and acted like Mick Jagger for 10 minutes.
Right.
You think that has anything to do with it? No, I don't think so. Let's just skip that and forget it happened.
Unrelated.
Yeah. One up double.
Unrelated.
And why like 7 days? Why would you set a bomb for? I mean, it take you that long to get out of town. Was it because there were lawyers coming? I'm like, even that would
really
have been
bad traffic in L.A.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You never know.
That trope didn't bother me. Mm. The perfect timing trope. It's always on bombs. There's some arbitrary strange timing on bombs. And by the way, people always who are making bombs, they go to great lengths to make a really sexy timer.
By the way, I love that trope. Yeah. No, here's the problem with Colin. I'm not sure it's truly a trope because it may just be a John Woo thing. And I can't think of other examples. But that happens. I feel like that happens a lot in movies where they'll say, here's a bomb, but to make it even more sinister, it's got some weird other tie-in, like, oh, there's a hackery thing going on here, or there's thing going on.
Or Jurassic Park.
Right. That's a good example, Jurassic Park. Thank you.
It's very much that.
With Wayne Knight going, That's awesome. By the way, I spent like an hour and a half yesterday getting down a rabbit hole on Wikipedia that started with Wayne Knight and ended somewhere I don't want to even talk about.
That's awesome.
I know. We were watching Seinfeld, and there was a big Newman episode, and the kids asked a question. I'm like, well, let me look it up. And I popped that thing up, and I just spent forever just digging down deep. What's Wayne Knight been doing? How did he lose so much weight? What roles has he had since then? What does he look like today? Who did he work with in this one thing? And before I know it, I'm into like – In 1972, he appeared in a pornography film with a something, something, something. It was like this crazy thing, and that happens sometimes. But
Man.
Hey, guys, join me for a break, won't you, to talk about Audible at audiblepodcast.com/filmsack, where you can get a free audiobook. And did you know, well, I guess you probably do know this because you're like us, you know that The Hobbit is coming, and it's coming quick, mid-December. There's no turning back. This is a thing that's happening. And what better way to prepare for the film adaptation, at least part one of the film adaptations of The Hobbit, by reading the book itself. Guess what? Audible.com has it. Sounds something like this.
Of Bilbo Baggins, that is, was the fabulous Belladonna Tuke, one of the three remarkable daughters of the old Tuke, head of the hobbits who lived across the water.
Very good. And it just gets better. You can get that book free. Unabridged by J.R.R. Tolkien, read by Bob Inglis, who's Inglis, rather, is a great great narrator, by the way. You can get that thing absolutely free, or any audiobook or any other piece of content that Audible provides absolutely free by just trying them out. And you do that by going to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Go do it today. Quit listening to me. Well, don't. Listen to the rest of the show. But after this, go grab it. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. We appreciate their support of the show. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
What?
So ended up in some porn.
It always ends up in porn.
I thought you just found something like you had a bleeder or something. Like, whoa, hold on, you guys. Can we pause the podcast? I've got a problem here. All right. So there's so much more to say. I do want to drop a couple pieces of trivia on you real quick. Originally, Arnold Schwarzenegger. We know him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Get to the chopper.
Who would he be playing, Castor Troy or?
Well,
Sean
him
Hunter?
And Stallone. And this is something you always have to triple check, because I swear anytime they talk about the roles in this film, were almost, it seems like it's almost always Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
That's a film sack meta trope. That's one of the things we've generated.
Yes. Yeah, we think we found that. They said that these guys were in line to play it, but John Woo said when he was brought on to direct, decided that Travolta and Cage would be more suited to the roles, having already worked with... Oh, no, wait. Yeah, he had worked with Travolta in Broken Arrow, right? A couple years earlier?
Right. Broken Arrow. Which we need to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's on our list somewhere.
It is.
Another Woo movie?
But is it on Netflix?
I don't know. But also, John Woo, the studio wanted to take the slash out of the name, because the way the name works is face slash off.
Awful. Like, they must have known.
Slash, get it.
They must have known that one day on the internet, people would be trying to browse Netflix for this film.
It would be a pain.
Or would be trying to search it out and not get the reality TV show for makeup artists.
Right. Or that a forward slash has all sorts of connotations in the technological world and the outside world.
So, yeah, really
you're
forward.
Go into your face directory, into the off directory that's contained in
But he claimed, he says he did it because we don't want people to think it's a hockey movie. Is what he said.
Wow, that was totally offensive.
Oh my God.
Not entirely offensive.
That never once crossed my mind. And I realize that that's because I don't ever think of hockey when I think of sports. But wow.
You do get the impression, though. You get the impression, if you weren't a big fan of this movie and you didn't know much about it, you could get that name confused with that Van Damme movie we did so many years
Sudden
ago.
Impact, yeah. Right. You know, based on what really happens in this film, wouldn't a better title be Face On?
Yes. Oh, funny. No, but then Nicolas Cage couldn't have said, face off.
Well,
it's deeper than that.
It's deeper than that because, he does want to get it off and then on again. But it's deeper than that. It's all these different meanings. Face off, like you're taking your face
off.
Two
people against each other, they face off. Yes.
Right. You're literally facing off with your nemesis.
I'm just making a joke, Johnson.
It's a pretty good, I'm just arguing this, a pretty decent, crappy play on words. It's okay.
It's not bad, but of course it led to the trope scene that we're talking about.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that this was not even a script. It was just somebody going, oh, you know what, face off? What if that was real? What if you could take your face off? And then they wrote a story totally around it. That's what I feel like.
Okay, and now you guys improv.
Exactly what they did.
Right.
What, you want to have a daughter with extra makeup on? Okay, just improv that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. She hasn't done too much, by the way. Those are first role. I followed her around a little bit on IMDb, and she hasn't really done much since that. She was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. But hang on for this ridiculous.
Oh,
we have
Dominic
to talk.
Swain?
Dominique Swain, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was some big popular movie she was in. I'm trying to remember what it was.
She was Lolita.
Oh, Lolita.
That's
what
it was. It wasn't like she was good in it. It was that it was a big controversial
Right.
Thing. Yep. Well, it's basically a continuation of that creepy scene when Travolta's getting the cigarette out of there.
Pretty much, yes. Just replace Travolta with Humbert.
You know, it was hard for me to have sympathy for
Die Hard 3.
The detectives and stuff and the FBI agents, whoever they were supposed to be, because it was never really it was explained in the story, but I never could remember if they were FBI agents, if they were, you know, if they were cops or what they were, because it was so weird. But CCH Pounder, by the way, favorite name of any actress.
That's such a great name, too.
Right?
Yeah. She's so great. Do you guys watch The Shield? Holy crap, she's good in The Shield.
Oh, she was great in ER. That's where I remember from.
Love her.
Good actress. And, I used to think she was the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego lady for a long time. It's not her. Totally somebody different. Anyway.
But when she went and she was burning cigarette holes into Nicolas Cage's character, Caster,
I was like,
he's a bad guy. I get it. But you're not all that great yourself, lady.
Whatever. So
I'm not going to be too sad when they throw the gasoline on your head and burn you.
Why'd you cut off his finger? He's just a vegetable.
He's a turnip. We can do it. Watch this. Look at that.
Like that scene from Big Daddy where he sticks the poker right into his foot.
Look what I can do to his faceless lips. He can't tell. He's asleep. So I want to make a mention of something that could have used a little bit more of, and they totally didn't use him enough, and that was the scarred up face dude from Gladiator. He's been in other stuff too.
Love
almost that guy.
Almost said Joaquin Phoenix, but I was like, oh, wait.
Oh, too soon? Too
cleft palate? I don't know.
Yeah. This guy's cleft palate times 900. But that's a really interesting actor. His story is really interesting, but I love it when he's on screen. There's something about him. Something about this clearly handsome face that is, you know, scarred for no reason.
He was the original face off and they screwed it up.
He was the first candidate. I see what you're saying.
Right.
And then there was a scene that made me kind of gross out. And I feel like we ought to showcase these on the show more and like which scenes really just disgusted us. Mm-hmm. For me, it's the tongue sucking.
Anything Nicolas Cage does.
It's Nicolas Cage's
sexual
tongue, dude. Ugh.
Anytime he does anything sexual, it's always like, ooh.
That thing's got like bread from yesterday in it and like just a nasty freaking swathy looking turd of a tongue sticking out of it.
That is so funny. You know what bothered me the most, though, for some weird reason? When they were trimming his hair when they had his face off. I was like, don't get that into the face wound.
Right into the wound. Well, yeah.
I mean, you can't do that later.
Smoking the cigarette. It's like, oh, dude, don't get an ash in your open face.
Yeah.
In your face hole.
He sounded
Stop
like,
it.
For when he first got his face, or when he woke up to find his face off. He sounded like Steve Buscemi after he got his face shot off on Fargo.
In Fargo,
Shot my face.
I kept trying to figure out if he wasn't supposed to have lips because when they take the face off, I was trying to figure out, would you still have the muscle part? Would you be able to produce an F word like he was dropping a couple times when he had his face off, but he couldn't do other ones?
I can't wait to play some of those clips because I have a bunch of that. Right. He managed a good F-bomber, dropped that thing pretty hard.
Yeah, he did.
I was going to say also, this is, again, these are nitpicks for a movie I enjoy, but when you toss the FBI lady who just been sucking on your nasty poo turd freaking cat turd tongue.
Poo turd.
When you toss her out of the, you shoot her and you toss her out of the plane. Why are we all stopping? Why did that stop you all? I understand it's a problem. I understand you take care of your own, but you've got a huge convoy of dudes. Somebody in the rear can get it. You guys keep going. If you're already, if you're about to get the plane, keep going. Don't stop because lady's in the road. She's dead.
Right. And you know what? Sean Archer has, these were things that just kept taking me out of the movie. Sean Archer has supervision because he was driving at, I guess, 60, 80, 100 miles an hour towards the plane with sunglasses on. And he was still able to see from, I guess, a quarter mile away that the woman was in the front of the airplane being held captive by him. And he was able to swerve.
Why you got
to
make fun of my eyes? Why you got to make fun of him? I could see way far.
Why you gotta cut my
hair? I can see wicked fall. Is that a $5 shake?
But why you gotta cut my hair? Oh my gosh. My TMS world just exploded. All right. Gina Gershon does not age. I just want to put that out there. She is. I just looked at her recently here. She's like 50 something. Holy crap. She's a beautiful woman. Now she's got a weird mouth. All right. I'll just put that out there. She got like some kind of weird deformed fish mouth. But other than that. She's gorgeous.
She's a pretty girl with some kind of weird deformed fish mouth.
Yeah, she got a weird fish mouth. She, you know what? If a girl leaves, if a girl kisses a napkin and leaves a little lip marks like you see, you know, speaking of tropes, if she did it, it'd be some like misshapen, weird, like, you know, bass face. Right, leave a mark. But she's really, I don't know what she does to make herself, and she doesn't look like she's had a ton of work done. She looks amazing still. But there's your Showgirls connection there, Randy.
Oh, yeah.
Gina Gershon.
Right.
There are two connections. There's Gina Gershon and Awful Script.
Those two things.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What else? Speaking of Steve Buscemi getting shot in the face, the guy who did the shooting is in this. He plays FBI... head of FBI heart attack man who had the heart attack in this.
That was terrible. That was heart attack level on the level of frogs. Okay.
That's right. It was Wade. My deal, Wade. It's my deal.
Yeah, it's my deal, Wade. Back off, Wade. Oh my gosh, let's watch Fargo. So that guy was
his heart attack. Yeah, his, you were saying, Brian?
He had a frog. It was reminiscent of having a heart attack on frogs. I mean, basically he just like he just like kept punking him to a heart attack until he finally just said, "Oh, he's not going to have it." So he chokes him out
on frogs. What?
Explain remember that. Frogs where the frogs jumped on the guy and made him have a heart attack at the end.
That's how they killed him. Yeah, listening to his record player.
Like, it has a heart. Their heart attacks. What'd you say? It's like a heart attack on frogs. Something about that.
This
is weird. It just sounded really weird. Sorry, that's my
bad. It took me back to frogs.
Okay, so explain to me why you think they should have killed Caster Troy after they got his face off.
Because they didn't need him anymore.
They do not need him. They put Travolta's face in a jar. What else they need? They're going to go back and get us some chest hair.
But
off
doesn't
of him?
That mean, aren't we just as bad as the terrorists if we just willy nilly kill him like they do?
Yeah. Oh, sure. But we'll dig cigarette butts into his arm.
Yeah, but well, okay, a little torture. Okay, but I mean, wouldn't you want to have him on trial? Assuming he's had, you know, he's got probably
he doesn't
got more
have
of
a face.
Well, he would because they're gonna come back and give Travolta's his back,
right? And then we're gonna do take all his they're gonna take his face back off.
Yeah, they're gonna put it back. They're gonna put it on back on Caster Troy,
Make him stand trial. But see, they think he's a vegetable at this point. They don't think he can stand trial.
I got another trope in there, Brian.
Whoa,
and that is the one where the bad guy is basically entirely in the power of his henchmen, and his henchmen bring him back. Which, again, in real life, no, the most aggressive of the henchmen would just take over being the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, but for some reason in the movies, they stay so loyal to Caster, freaking podcaster Troy in a coma.
You're making me want to make a t-shirt called Podcaster Troy. Knock that off, because that sounds fun.
Sure.
I think that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Podcaster Troy. I don't know if enough podcaster people who Troy. Like this movie would get it, but maybe they would. I don't know. All right. What else? Oh, yeah. The visit to the gravesite was pretty twisted, I thought. I wrote that down.
That was okay.
Oh, by the way, the stunt man used in the boat stuff could not look less like Nick Cage.
Right.
They weren't even trying, dude.
No.
I was like, who is that? That's that looks like the Million Dollar Man guy. What's his name?
Steve Major or Lee Majors?
Lee Majors, the fall guy hanging on the edge of the boat.
Might have been.
It's short and kind of fat.
Exploding boat.
Yeah, that was real stupid. All right, well, I think we ought to get to some damn clips.
This movie, I know we say this a lot, but you could have really pulled any scene.
Yeah, any
and
dialogue.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's all good. So let's start with this one about the Fourth Amendment.
When we put this thing to bed, you can brand the Fourth Amendment on my butt.
Oh, let's go ahead and be all PG in your rating.
Wow.
And I wasn't sure what the Fourth Amendment was because I'm really slack. So I looked at it. Yeah, true story.
That's fun.
Illegal search and seizures.
Search and seizures, right?
A few other little things about, you know, liberty.
Yeah.
Liberty.
And that. Let's see. Here's another one that I just thought. Oh, this is him being bored. This is Caster Troy being bored.
Let's go. Let's go. I'm bored. Let's go.
I actually like that. I thought that was really funny.
I like that one a lot.
Why was he suddenly going into that accent? Was that explained?
That's a good point. I think he was just on the plane waiting for them to leave. Like he'd gotten there, gotten his chiclets, shown us his cool guns, his golden guns.
He was ready to go.
Yeah. He played a lot of GoldenEye. He knows what golden guns can do to a guy.
I love how the cops come to stop him
taking
off in a private jet with some cars.
Yeah, that's the way you do it.
Because cars can stop jets.
Yeah, cars onto the tarmac. That's what you always do.
Yeah.
That's the anti-trope, because usually it's the, you know, the plane just goes right over the top of the cars. But in this case,
they suddenly found themselves on a 50,000-foot runway, and the plane was a little heavy.
Yeah,
helicopter on it. Yeah.
Well, what was the FBI agent on the plane going to do? What, like, ultimately, what was her job? Because that confused me.
Her job was to get shot and to be out of the plane.
The reason she dropped her cover was they found out they were on the tarmac on their way to intercept them, and they said they're on their way or whatever. Castor Troy, and he goes, get up and move, and he starts shifting around or whatever, and then she suddenly pulls out a gun and says FBI something something. And then she gets, you know, sacrificed. You weren't even going to do anything. What were you going to do? Fly all the way to wherever they were going to go? And then what then?
Is Scott finally starting to question this film?
Oh, no. These are always busted. This stuff is all not, right. But it does not change my enjoyment of the film at all. Because, you know, he could eat a peach for hours.
You know, I can eat a peach for hours.
Wait. I just got that. He's talking about her.
Yes.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yes.
You're just now getting that?
And by peach, I'm really talking about your I guess I've got to keep this without the explicit tag, right?
You can call it a vajayjay. Vajayjay. All right, moving on. How about a weird way of saying... Oh, this is short, but it's a weird way of saying Castor or Kaz for short. All right, so here.
Kaz!
Kaz! It's the brother.
I've been called Kaz. Come get me.
By the way, that guy seems like a guy that should be in a bunch of other movies. He reminds me a lot. He's like the some kind of doppelganger for, what's his name's brother? Dude that just made that movie about the Iranian hostage deal. My brain.
Not without my daughter.
Affleck? Affleck. Casey Affleck is who this guy reminded me of.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can see that.
Kind of had that vibe to him.
Yeah. There was a trope right with that casting, this whole nerd.
Yeah.
The person with the slightly nerdy job has to look like a huge nerd. He's his brother, right?
Yeah,
right.
His brother.
The weaker brother.
They're brothers. They don't look anything like each other. And the one with the slightly nerdier job, it looks like Nate Silver. He looks like nothing like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah,
right. All this movie needed was a robot to go with the nerd.
You're right.
Right.
He should have had a robot servant.
Right.
This is one of those things I'm talking about was probably dropped from, you know, because they're like, we got to Americanize this thing, and it would have been better.
Mm. Well, the script originally circulated was not a Hong Kong script. I think Wu came in and just woofed.
No, it was an American movie. Yeah. And
I think he came in and said, no, everyone put pencil down. Lots of gun, suck on tongue. Happy ending. That's it.
I'm offended right now.
Those are your three ingredients in your Wu pie, dude.
I'm saying it could have been better. He could have brought all his tools.
What they say at the massage parlor that I go into
sometimes.
Oh, right. Man. Lots of guns, suck on tongue.
Happy ending. Oh, Arvada. Ever since you guys got legalized pot, things have been...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything's just dropped. Every inhibition in this town.
Yeah.
Here is the clip to call Clash of the Dudes. This is Clash of the Dudes.
Try terrorism for hire. We'll blow some shit up. It's more fun. Shut the f*** up.
You watch your f***ing mouth!
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not Castor Troy. That's pretty tough. Somebody pretending to be Castor Troy.
Shut your effing mouth. No, this is before he got...
When he's in the prison.
This is when they confronted
that's
him
during
the
battle
hangar.
In the hangar. Yeah,
yeah. Before he got blown
you're
by that
right,
engine.
But doesn't he say it also later on? Doesn't Sean Archer, who is playing Castor Troy, say it later on as well in the prison?
Maybe does he?
He says, "Watch your mouth," because he. Yeah, so I guess he was trying to play into that. Makes more sense to me now. I must have missed that.
Oh, because he heard him say it in the. Subtlety here going on, everybody. Look at the script. It's pretty impressive.
Oh my god!
Impressive stuff. Whimpering Nick Cage.
Police man, don't shoot me.
He's so creepy. He plays creepy so well.
And the name Pincus.
Pincus.
That's all. Just Pincus.
Pincus. Pincus.
There you go. Why you gotta touch my hair, Pincus?
Pincus.
All right, dorky prison dude. Bad. Just some bad overdub on this guy. And I always look for the overdubs, and this is pretty bad.
Hey, what's the matter, pal? Don't you
Remember the little people?
Oh, sounds like something from a Disney movie.
It did, like hot lead and cold feet or something. Right. Oh, that's funny. That sound that Disney movies had for live action in the 60s and 70s.
Right,
it's
right.
A weird thing. Go watch like Apple Dumpling Gang and you'll hear it. Yeah. It's an odd thing. I think what that is now that I'm older, I think I get it. I think those entire movies were overdubbed.
Yeah, there were soundstage stuff. Yeah,
everything. Absolutely. I think it was all filmed outside and then they recorded all the dialogue back indoors. All right. How about Woohoo in the prison? Oh no, this is what this is. If you guys want to hear what it's like for an entire block of the world's worst terrorist prisoners to do basically what happened like on the Cosby Show, if somebody burned somebody else, or something on a TGI Friday kind of show, this is what that sounds like. Oh no, you didn't. All right, some more weird sounds coming from Nicolas Cage.
I was hoping you captured that. That's when he sees himself in the mirror for the first time, right?
Yeah. It's this cross between disgust and ecstasy or something.
No, it was disgust and hatred. Like he was suffering, wanting to kill himself right then and there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Could he have done me a favor though and not taken his index finger from his right hand and reached up and pulled out like a little clotty scabby chunk of goo out of his face? That'd be great. Thanks for that, Nick Cage. Here's that shortened. I'm gonna keep that forever.
I love that scream. It's so funny.
Here's something I wrote down as laugh and wheeze. I don't know what I meant. My gosh.
I love that.
Jeez. Sell it, baby. Sell it. The next 100 years? Sure.
The next 100 years.
Oh yeah.
That Travolta loves to do that.
He does. Yes. He does it all the time. I can't think of another movie, but I know he does. I've heard that.
The next 100 years.
Where he kind of sings it. There's a little vibrato in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of like when Gandalf does anything. You shall not pass. All right. Happy day is Castor Troy.
Well, happy day. It's Castor Troy.
I just like the sound of that.
Right. Happy day.
That Who was the good. Person delivering that? That sounded really familiar.
That was the doctor in the infirmary.
Oh, right.
Who said who was torturing the grunty dude, and then he walked in and.
Well, happy day. It's Castor Troy.
It sounds a little bit like
Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton, yeah.
Right, it does, yeah.
Not him, though, but no. Similar sounding voice. All right, the other scream. So it's not the
it's like an X-wing fighter taking off.
Right, but it's not the Wilhelm, it's that other one you hear in movies all the time. When somebody dies or jumps. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the name of it is, but I was told there was a Wilhelm helm. I never heard it, but I captured that instead.
No, I never heard of Wilhelm either.
That's interesting. And also I hate when they have the stunt people jump from high places and they do the running man kick thing.
Yeah.
That irritates the crap out of me.
No, you love it. Shut up. You love it.
I hate that crap.
How about the other iconic moment in this movie right here?
I'd like to take his face off.
Are you going to keep going with that?
No, that's all I did on that.
Oh, really? With the whole response? What? You'd like to take his face off? Yes, I'd like to take his face off. Have we sold this yet?
I know it. Off.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a big trope.
Yeah.
Probably question for you. Name another movie, not a James Bond movie, with the title call out right there in the dialogue.
Oh, so many.
Because the James Bond movies are easy. You just pick any one of them.
Clear and Present Danger. They have one where that this represents a clear and present danger to our nation.
Yeah, who is it? There was some, I think it's Seth Green, who says that when he goes and sees a movie with his friends, that as soon as they say the name of the movie in the film, he goes, woo!
Right.
In the audience.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I like that when that happens.
Probably my favorite example is Snakes on a Plane, for obvious reasons. there's so many. The Dark Knight has it all over, especially at the very end. Back to the Future, remember? Every Back to the Future film, they
Marty, I'm going to send you back to the future.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you still do the best Doc Brown in the room. Not going to lie. All right, how about, let's see, something about religion?
Isn't this religious?
Oh, it's when he's in the, yeah. It's another thing John Woo did a lot.
It's real religious. With the,
yeah. Right. And John Woo's like, hey, we need a church. I need two dozen doves. And 500 guns. Thank you very much.
And and a mirror that they can both stand on each side of.
Here's a great scene where they've crashed the boat. It's kind of going to be the end of Castor Troy in the body of Archer, and he's cutting himself up, and he finally gets shot to die or whatever. And you get this out of Nicolas Cage, who still has Archer inside of him, but it's Nick Cage delivering the line. Or is that, was after his voice box changed. So now, actually,
yes.
That's
yelling. You're hearing Travolta, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty twisted. I love it.
Because he got dislodged because, you know, he had either a violent sneeze or get punched in the neck.
Right. It certainly was, but obviously he wasn't going to do that before he talked to his wife because that would have made it easy.
Right. Honey, punch me in the neck.
No, let's go with the whole blood type thing instead.
Yeah.
Do you ever get
by
a little
the way,
tired?
Two blood types in face rejection? Whatever. Go ahead, Randy. I'm sorry.
Just going to say, did you ever get a little tired watching this film of the constant realization that you were hearing the other actor's voice?
No. It didn't bother me. I was okay with it. But that's because I'm okay with most of this. It's because I have a low threshold for what I'm okay with Face Off. I asked Scott Fletcher what he thought of this movie. And his response was an easy one, and it was short. This was it.
You know, I could eat a peach for hours.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. And thus endeth the clips, which means it's time for this. We're going to do a little bit of award given. The Film Sack Awards, our weekly award show, where we give it awards it deserves and a few that it doesn't. Film Sack Awards this week go as follows. The What Does Nick Cage's Tongue Taste Like Award. I would like to ask you guys what you think Nick Cage's tongue tastes like. Let's start with Dunaway.
Sour cream and onion.
Perfect. Brian. Ibbot.
I was going to say a tongue sandwich because that's what his brother was eating. That was a little too obvious, though. Hard salami.
All right. Hard salami. Randy.
Hard salami.
Rotten grass-fed beef.
All right, perfect. I'm going with hobo anus. The correct answer was hobo anus.
You're wrong.
Next order, the Magic Zip Disc Drive Award. We talked about that earlier. That thing was amazing.
Love that.
Oh, the graphics on that thing. And finally, the Magic Headphones on the Kit Award. These apparently can dampen all sorts of terrible life-altering visuals.
That's right. They can prevent you from needing therapy as an adult.
Yeah.
You can watch hardcore porn, and you hear that music, and all of a sudden you're in the Wizard of Oz.
What was the music? Was it Wizard of Oz music?
It was somewhere over the rainbow, yeah.
Yeah. I, for some reason, I kept thinking it was When You Wish Upon a Star. That's not it. Or is that it?
No. It was definitely Over the Rainbow.
When you wish. They're basically the same song. Moving on to Star Trek connections. They sent to us by Daryl, the Trek nerd. First off, John Bloom. He was the present medical technician on Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. He played a behemoth alien. So he's a big, hairy dude.
I love that movie.
I do, too. I like that movie a lot. That movie has what's his name in it? He's really good. Famous actor. Won Academy Award last year.
Christopher Plummer,
thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Also had Worf in it. Worf played Worf's grandpa or whatever it was.
Yes.
Harv Presnell, Victor Lazaro, you know, guy that shot Buscemi in the face in Fargo. Yep. He was on Voyager, played Colonel Q in the episode The Q and the Gray. Was he a Q? That'd be awesome if he was a Q. Anyway.
There's a civil war going on in the Q continuum.
Oh. All right, and he was one of them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They just call him Colonel Q.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Where's Coffee Maker Q? I need some coffee before I can go call the TV Q and tell him what I think. All right. Chick Daniel also played an FBI squad leader. He was in Star Trek First Contact, stunt actor and technical advisor. Thank you for those, Daryl. We appreciate it. And I would give today's soundtrack grade a COD for Call of Duty. It was like playing a Call of Duty game.
D-O-O-D-Y.
It was pretty good music. Come on. You got to admit. It was all right. Towel, dude. He's all right.
It wasn't distracting or anything. No.
No, it fit the stuff, and it was, but it felt like a Call of Duty game. It was that same style of Bruckheimer-ish, you know. The first movie I ever saw that really had that for me was Crimson Tide. And then maybe the pinnacle of it was The Rock. I thought The Rock had that music just down. And now they do it for everything. It's like in every movie ever made. Even the Pirates of the Caribbean have it. Yeah, Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer has caused everyone to...
Who literally did Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and 3, I think.
Speaking of, we got a little Black Ops.
Black Ops 2 comes out in a couple weeks, right? And the thing about that game...
Like two days.
Oh, 2 days of this next week? Oh, maybe I skipped Halo for a reason. But here's what I was going to say. The music for that, guess who's doing the music for that? Soundtrack on that game, Trent Reznor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think he's done that since Quake 2.
Right.
Is my memory.
He likes to score.
He does, doesn't he? But his work on like Dragon Tattoo and Social Network was real good, and I'm super stoked for what he'll do with that game. So we'll see. All right, that's next Tuesday. Have a happy COD week. Week. You always see. Oh, what do we do now? Oh, yeah, we do the Twitter post. Hey, here in 140 characters or less, won't you, Randy, please sum it up?
Face off. If I never again see John Travolta pretending to be Nick Cage, pretending to be John Travolta, pretending to come on to his pretend teenage daughter by giving her real cigarettes, I'll consider my life a pretend success.
Oh, man. Just a pretend one? Nice. Let's hear now from Dunaway.
Face off. Makes me feel like Nicolas Cage and John Travolta had a sex sandwich with my eyes. Let's go. Let's go. I'm bored. Let's go.
Let's call back. And then finally, Mr. Ibbett.
Face off. Check your realism at the door and just submerge yourself into the cheek. What smells like cooking John Travolta's cheek skin?
Ew. Ugh. I don't want to know what his tongue tastes like.
That's all I can think of when you see little smoke trails coming off of their laser cutting.
There's only one tongue in that entire movie I find somewhat palatable, and it's Gina Gershon's. Even though it's coming out of that big fish face, it's got a good tongue.
Oh my God!
I'm kidding. I like her.
You just made fun of Gina Gershon's face in a movie with Nick Cage.
Just her lips. They're misshapen.
You can agree with me, right? That Nick Cage, based on the ugliness of his face, has no business being in a movie about faces.
Oh, and speaking of which, can we say the IMDb photo of the week goes to him? I think his photo
goes
is
to Nicolas Cage.
It's really weird. Yeah, go look
at
it.
How do you stretch Nicolas Cage's face on that big melon of a face that John Travolta has, by the way?
Thank
you. I probably should have brought it up earlier, but it just dawned on me. I was thinking that
that was the... Go ahead.
Well, they tried to explain it, didn't they? I thought they did.
Yeah, they did. They tried to explain it by that little undercoating thing they put underneath it that mold like the face structure. But I'm like, that only works one way, because you can make it larger, but you can't make it smaller.
Right.
And you can only make it larger if skin is like really elastic and doesn't like stretch a little skin, and you'll see it doesn't look the same.
Here's what I picture. I picture Brian Dunaway hearing that description, hearing that explanation for this problem he has, with his arms folded, sitting back in his chair with a frumpy look on his face going, no sale, no sale,
no sale, sir. No, sir.
I could see that.
For some reason, I was thinking of Cartman.
Yep. Let's get to what? Oh, hey, well, here's what I learned while you drove your flaming boat through another flaming boat. Higher ups in the FBI can walk into a holding clinic and push a lit cigarette into the skin of a comatose patient. Learn that. You always want a black friend to scratch your itchy face in a stairwell. That's important.
That's a very touching scene.
It was, wasn't it?
Touched him. Yeah. He was touching him. Oh, my gosh. We didn't even talk about the face swipe that he did. Oh, my God.
What?
The face swipe that Travolta's character was always doing to his family.
Oh, the whole
thing. Oh, touching their face.
Dragging his fingers down their face.
Oh. Right. That would be the most annoying thing.
I'm a sucker for dad kid stuff. It's hard. I'll
give
it
to his wife.
This wasn't dad kid stuff. This was grotesque.
I know.
This
Yeah, the only reason I do that if I'm going to go do a blah, 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 at the very end with their lips.
Please tell me you didn't see anything like that and think, oh, that could have been cute.
Just start going down his face and then just shove their face like real hard. That'd be pretty funny. But I'm a sucker for crap like that. So what?
Stop saying that.
Right. You know he's got those Fritos on his hands. You just know it smells like Fritos when he does it.
We have Nick and I have a secret handshake that nobody in the world knows. I know it's not the same. I know it's not the same. Fritos.
Fritos.
A secret handshake with somebody you know really well doesn't make any sense to me, because, like,
oh, you should see it. It's epic.
The the point of a secret handshake, though, should be to identify that someone's a part of a club, even when you don't know, just by looking at them.
Well, I shouldn't say it's secret, because you can actually watch us do the handshake. And that's the whole point, actually. It's just that it's so fast and so furious and so well rehearsed that people are always a little blown away by it. Well, so let's hang around. I'll show you.
And try is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
It's but true. What if Randy comes over to Scott's house and switches faces with him? Then he would have to know the handshake.
Oh, right. Nick would be able to identify the imposter deluxe.
Should the four of us have a little secret thing right now that, you know, if we ever get our face pulled off of us and put onto somebody else, something that only the four of us know so that we can identify?
Yeah, we should put this on pause for a second. Okay, we're back. And now
we all have our secret things.
Yep, we're
good. Much better now.
The code word is penis. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say it out loud.
Oh.
Okay, so we can't get out of this episode without explaining that. Speaking of that, it is utterly ridiculous.
How come you're uncircumcised now?
Yeah, right, yeah. It's just the most...
Can those things heal up like that?
No, dude, it's like bathrooms in movies. No one ever goes. It's just you don't notice. You don't think of it because it's just like, well, no, Captain Picard, maybe there's a toilet on the Enterprise, but they're never going to show us. Well, in this case, they're just not going to bother. And maybe Joan Allen is weird. Maybe she doesn't know what she's looking at. I don't know.
It's been a few months. She's probably forgotten what it looks like.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it bothered me every time. Every time he just showed up, he would be gone for like weeks at a time to heal and everything else. And she would just be like, oh, hey, yeah, there's leftovers in the fridge.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Some of that was weird. But maybe that's what he was doing with the hand and the face thing with her. He was just making sure she's as blind as she was last time he saw her so she wouldn't be able to tell.
Are you as stupid and blind as you were last time?
Make sure she can't tell his unit from any other. Only the highest of security prisons get fancy magnetic boots. And the last thing I learned was Nick Cassavetes can sure take a bullet to the neck and be pretty chill about it.
Right. That was actually really cool.
Yeah. I actually kind of like him. He makes movies. He's usually not in them. He makes a lot of movies. That guy. Moving on to some emails. Got this right here from Jonathan Hughes, who says, Dear Scott, Randy, Brian, and Brian, two things. First, I think I have a great animated movie on Netflix streaming for you, because we've been talking about that. It's called Fire and Ice, directed by Ralph Bakshi.
Backsheet.
It's a swords and sorcery fantasy released in 1983 and was animated via rotoscoping. I think it would be good for sacking. I swear, isn't that the same guy that did the Lord of the Rings thing? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hobbit, yeah. The original Hobbit.
Okay, yeah, that's why the name's familiar. Second thing, a while back, Brian Dunaway talked about an encounter with a velvet ant. Remember that, Brian?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Says, well, I had an encounter of my own a few summers back in South Carolina. Seeing one and not knowing what it was, I tried to capture it with a plastic bottle.
Dear Lord.
I know, right? I slammed the bottle down and accidentally cut off its bottom half. I picked that up and poked at it. Every time I did, the stinger would extend.
Oh, my God.
My friend and I thought it was cool and eventually tossed it, not knowing that we had almost stung myself to the point of needing medical attention. Thought I'd share. Love the show, Jonathan Hughes.
Yeah, scary,
don't mess with those things, dude. Those are
scary.
Once in a while, something will show up like in the bug world and make you realize, ooh, some of these things have not evolved to the point of being not scary anymore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like a version of an ant. You know, an ant I'll see out here is like a little dumb black one that wants to eat the cracker I dropped. Big freaking deal. But that thing, that'll walk off with your kid.
Right.
You know, and eat it. our next movie is Con Air, but not in the way you think. It's a comedy.
We're actually going to be talking about the hairdryer product.
I can't wait.
No, we are going to be watching Con Air in a commentary Trek style thing, which we have not done in forever and ever and ever. And I want to thank a couple of people. Well, I really want to thank all the people who suggested Con Air for so long as a possible commentary track sacking, and we're going to do that. But more importantly, someone who originally sent DVDs to me or DVD to me was Jeff Bonnar, B-O-N-N-A-R-R. I hope I'm saying your last name right. Bonner. And Brian thinks it's Boner, but we're sure you've never heard that your whole life. I'm sure no one's ever teased you about your last name. But yes, Jeff and all those who requested it, we're going to watch Con Air with each other as a commentary track, which means you get to cue that thing up and watch the movie right along with us. And I'm pretty stoked because we haven't done one of these in a long, long time. So stay tuned for that. That's next week right here on FilmSack. You guys excited about that one?
Yeah, very excited.
I am.
Can't wait.
I wish it was happening right away.
Yeah,
me too.
Double dose of Nick Cage, baby, and you get to see Buscemi and freaking Danny Trejo's in this, isn't
Danny
he?
Danny Trejo, John Malkovich, John Cusack, Carl Meany.
I love this movie. I do. I love it.
And Monica Potter, the house elf.
Oh, right, the
take
house elf.
Take your daddy's bunny.
Well
why,
said.
Why you killed Dobby?
On that note. On that note, let's get the hell out of here. If you want to visit us on the web, you can. All our episodes are there. Links to all that, our show notes, and of course, commenting, and even the forums. You can go check all that out at filmsack.com. You can email us at filmsack@gmail.com. And we're all over Twitter at filmsack. You can leave us a review on iTunes as well. We always love to read those. That is going to do it for us. Oh, and don't forget, this coming Wednesday, so today's Monday when you get this, this Wednesday, the Return of Autopilot, Season 2, starting with Babylon 5, myself and Tom Merritt.
Can I throw in one more thing
please,
also?
Please.
Film Sack is nominated for a podcast award at podcastawards.com.
I totally forgot to mention that.
So
yes.
Please go vote. You can vote once a day. There's 4 days left in the week. Well, I think voting ends on November 15th, which is Thursday. So one day for each of us. Vote once for each of us for the next 4 days.
For the next 4 days. if you'd like to see Film Sack win, we've won in years past. We'd love to win again. And that would be fantastic. I don't know what category. Are we just in film? And
we're in movies. TV? Yeah. Movie?
Yeah. That makes
and
sense.
And if we win. Well, whether or not we win, at least two of the four of us, maybe more of the four of us, will be in Las Vegas to do sort of a meetup, a Frog Pants meetup thing on the Strip.
Yep, and if you're going to the Podcast Media Expo thing, I believe we'll be all up in that joint.
Be up in that grill.
Yeah, as a result of this, especially if we win, so go vote.
And, it's only a two-hour drive for me, some of the way my neighbors drive.
Whoa.
Oh, jeez.
2 hours, nice. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, it's only a 2.5-day drive for me.
It's about 5 hours for me unless I'm really anxious, and then it's 4 hours. So
10 hours for me.
Oh, Lord.
Is that before or after you smoking the pot?
Colorado.
I'm in no hurry.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Still federally illegal.
Podcastawards.com. That's where you want to go for that. It's going to do it, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with a commentary track for Con Air. Until then, for me, for Brian, and for Randy, we'll see you next time.
I could talk about Nicolas Cage for hours.
Well, if you're Sean Archer, I guess I'm Caster Troy.
Bro, I'm so fried. I don't know why that Yeti jumped me the other day.
If I were to send you flowers, where would I... No, let me rephrase that. If I were to let you suck my tongue, would you be grateful? Isn't this religious? Oh, yes, the eternal battle between good and evil, saints and sinners. But you are still not having fun. I want to take his face off. Eyes, nose, skin, teeth, it's coming off. You know, I could eat a peach for hours.